Off the Ball. GAA.
I think as well, the big thing with obviously trying to stop David Clifford is you have to try and stop the source, and the big source of that is obviously Paddy.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be joined by Kevin McStay from 7:30. He is heading up the Gaelic Football Advisory Committee. If that sounds a little bit like the Football Review Committee, well, that is because it's supposed to be trustees of the FRC's work and continue on all the great work that Jim Gavin and co have done over the past couple of years. We're going to be talking to him, as I say, from 7:30 to talk about what they're actually keeping an eye out for. There has been some suggestion that the 4-point goal may not be dead. Of course, there's been a lot of controversy regarding refereeing over the past couple of weeks. Will there be a potential for goal line technology coming up in Croke Park soon? We will ask Kevin McStay all about that from 7:30. Between 8 and 9 tonight, I'm very excited to tell you that A Slight Tangent makes its return. We know it's been a busy sports year, busy sports summer. Certainly things are about to cool down now over the month of August, so a good time to make A Slight Tangent back into our schedule. From 9 to 10 then, we're going to be joined by Mick McDermott, who's assistant manager of the Ghanaian football team. He's been working with Carlos Quiroz. He was at the World Cup with them. He'll be joining us for an update. And then we'll also be speaking to David Walsh, who is at the Tour de France. There have been overnight drug tests done with some of the cyclists. They are not happy. The peloton is up in arms about what's happened to them, all the testing. So we'll be getting David Walsh's take on all of that. Our number is 087-918-180, and you can send us a WhatsApp message on that number. Eve Conway will be bringing us the news round momentarily. Eve, a very good evening to you.
And to you.
Arthur O'Dea is here as well. Good evening, Arthur.
Hello. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. I think it was the World Cup was just beginning the round of 32. The last World Cup game I watched before leaving was Belgium 3, Senegal 2. What have I missed? What have I missed? Anything interesting happened since then? That was a good way to bow out, I think.
Yeah, that was it. That was the high point.
It was an amazing game, actually. Did the World Cup, if you were to draw a bell chart, is it a bell chart? Did the World Cup kind of rise to a peak in the early knockout stages, like Argentina, Cape Verde, Argentina, Egypt, and then kind of come down to a lower base as the semi-finals and final played out?
Maybe, but like it was thoroughly entertaining. Again, not to relitigate old ground here, mm-hmm. Eve, but like the England-Argentina game was amazing drama.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, what's happening? Another defender, keep going. but I get you, yeah, I mean, that was wacky. So you missed like all the Balogun stuff that followed?
No, like obviously I followed it. I was completely out of mobile service at a very inconvenient time, which was the two semi-finals. So there were 2 days where I had absolutely no access to anything, and it was for the two semi-finals, and that was awful. Waking up in the morning, I was in Mongolia, by the way, and I was out in the western part of the country, and everybody around me, which made it a little bit more frustrating, was blissfully uninterested in the world of football. So I was waking up perturbed by the fact that England might well be World Cup finalists right now, and I had to wait a number of hours before getting the information. And that was a very, very frustrating thing. But the Balogun thing and everything like that, I mean, I was very much abreast of all of that.
You know, I wish I had no service in Western Mongolia during that game, as opposed to watching it. It was a long, tough, hard watch.
I mean, you were obviously pro-England during all of that, and you were flying the flag, the St. George's flag for all of this. I have to admit, though, that I have been cheating on Off the Ball. I've been working with a different media company. Been working with the state broadcaster. That's right, the Mongolian state broadcaster. So I was at the National Stadium in Ulaanbaatar a couple of weeks ago at this big wrestling event, this book wrestling event, which sort of punctuates their national holiday in the middle of the summer. And I was approached by a journalist of MNB, which stands for Mongolian National Broadcaster, and she made a package about me. So if you go onto their Facebook account, there is them fascinating over a ginger lad from Ireland in this national stadium. Let's hear her intro to this package in Mongolian, obviously.
Owen, Shahanim. Тэрээр бүгд найрамдах Ирланд улсын News Talk радиогийн автобол нэвтрүүлгийг хөтлөдөг мөн түүний өмнөд Америкт хийсэн аялын тухай Diverted подкастыг олон улсын томоохон платформаас сонсох боломжтой юм.
Did you hear Off the Ball News Talk there?
Yeah,
very good. Very good. Then the greatest moment of my life happened. Like, it doesn't get any better than this. I felt like Paolo Maldini. I felt like Cannavaro. I felt like Kaká because I got the Champions League magazine treatment. Here's the next part of the package.
But what I love to learn about
Mongol Dunhir Shilti Bukchudvi,
жуулуучд нь ч дэлхийн түвшний хүмүүс. Энэ нь Ирландтай баг зэрэг төстэй санагдсан. Ирланд ч гэсэн маш олон алдартай тулаанчдтай. Манайд бүхөөс илүү бокс хөгжсөн ч аль аль нь эртний түүхтэй. Тиймээс энэ тал дээр хоёр улс хоорондоо ижил төстэй онцлогтой. Үндэсний спорт нь тухайн ард түмний онцлог үнэт зүйлсийг илэрхийлдэг гэж боддог. Миний хувьд Монгол ирэхээс өмнө
Yes. Oddball,
yeah. Certainly. So I was there to follow around a few wrestlers, which may or may not be a soft launch of a radio documentary that's coming down the line whenever I get my editing together.
Better be.
But I was, it would be very, very weird if it was just a curiosity. But I was much more of an oddity when I crossed over the border into China, into Inner Mongolia. For whatever reason there, whatever difference goes on there between the people of Mongolia and the people of China, rural China, they certainly have either a greater interest in Off the Ball as a podcast and recognize me from Instagram, or definitely see me as a greater oddity, because the amount of selfies that I was asked for once I went into rural China was exponentially larger than those in Mongolia. So make of that what you will.
I'm guessing you aren't too au fait with the native languages.
No.
How are you getting by?
I guess Google Translate when you were in big trouble. I had a fixer on one or two occasions who was obviously a translator. Hello, thank you is kind of, I mean, all you really need to know for polite reasons. Mm-hmm. And then Google Translate whenever you're really stuck. But you'd be surprised how resourceful you become.
Correct me here now if there's any spoilers, feel free not to answer. But for the 2 days you were without internet access.
Uh-huh.
I mean, were you on your own or were you in a group?
I had a fixer for that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool.
I had a fixer for those couple of days, yeah. That language would have been Kazakh. So like, right. They couldn't introduce a third language. And having to find out how to say hello, thank you and goodbye in three languages would have been, to find out nine different phrases,
What's hello in Mongolian?
Hello, Sam Bano.
Ah.
Yeah, that would be hello in Mongolian. So there you go. That is your language lesson for today. Before we get into your news round, and before we get to Ben, actually, who's at Dailyman Park, just want to tee up this Kevin McStay piece, because this is going to be really interesting. I'm not sure people are overly aware of what's actually going on at the moment. So we're very aware of the fact that the Football Review Committee has come to Gaelic football and revolutionised the game. And I think everybody's very positive about where the game is at the moment. But there is this Gaelic Football Advisory Committee, which now exists. It's going to work in conjunction with the Games Intelligence Unit, which will provide statistics. These guys will provide expertise. There's the likes of Kevin McStay, Maurice Fitzgerald, Conor McManus on this advisory committee. And basically, as custodians of the work that the FRC have done, they will be recommending further tweaks to the game, should they be needed, at the end of this year. So when we speak to Kevin McStay, we're going to be talking about the possibility of a four-point goal, which, to the best of my knowledge, is not dead in the water just yet. We'll be talking about the possibility of VAR and goal line technology in the game. And one really interesting topic, which I haven't heard discussed too much, is the fact that a backcourt violation may become a possibility in the game of Gaelic football, because there is still this ongoing concern about too much hand passing in the game, and that a backcourt violation may encourage more of a vertical approach to Gaelic football as opposed to a horizontal approach to Gaelic football, which you have to say still does exist. What are your initial thoughts on that when I mentioned the possibility of not being able to go back beyond the halfway line once you cross it?
I always loved the idea of seeing what it would look like. So there's a natural inquisitiveness. But the more I think about it, I don't find basketball interesting, right? And that's partially because I feel there's doubtless nuances that I can't pick up on as someone who's not a regular watcher of it, right? And I accept that for sure. But my general impression of it still seems to be that most games kind of come down to the fourth quarter and the winning and losing of them are done there. And that's fine. That's probably a good thing, like, right? Entertainment-wise, everything else, that's probably, it's like, oh, of course, you'd want every game to be kind of more or less competitive. But it's also, I guess, like a scoring thing. And I while the championship has been great, you still want some sort of variety. You want the ability for a game to take on different forms, and it's not just everything's a shootout and everything is kind of the same sort of thing, because I guess everything it'll become mundane then in its own way. So while I wouldn't be like, oh no, definitely not, can't change anything, it's perfect, leave it as it is, because that'd be silly. But I'd be interested to know how... I like the disruptors. I like people who come on and will then change things, and like, how are we going to interpret this in such a way that it'll suit us, nominally a smaller or weaker county or whatever, against the bigger giants who it might suit, who already are equipped with the best forwards, shooters, whatever it is. Because I guess that's what it's aimed towards. It's aimed towards the attacking-minded teams, it would make sense. But that would be my initial reaction. But
because the game is pretty frantic at the moment, but you do have one last option to take the sting out of a game, which is side-to-side hand passing in that section generally between the halfway line and the 45, the 2 metre arc really, 2 point arc. But what often happens in those situations is that you have players coming back, you know, to make it four, and then a player bursts forward, or the player in possession just goes back beyond his own halfway line. To compress that would make the game even more frantic. Mm. And it kind of does force you into really going for the jugular in every sort of attack. I would love to see it trialled and just kind of confirm that it would be a little bit too frantic. But yeah, it just be fat. Like, does the game then become stretched where the keep ball actually starts to happen in the corner of the pitch as much as it does around the halfway line, because you can't go back over the halfway line?
Down, yeah.
I'd love to see it, but as I say, we'll be chatting to Kevin McStay about this from 7:30, and also chatting a little bit about Mayo as well. Eve, we are going to start tonight's news round. You're going to kick things off with what's going on in European football tonight.
Yeah, so Bows were 1-0 down at halftime against Balchini at Dalyman Park in the first leg of their Conference League second round qualifier. Now, there's 54 minutes on the clock at the moment and they're still 1-0 down. They had breezed past St. Joseph's of Gibraltar in their first round qualifier, winning 2-0 on aggregate in what was their first European appearance in 5 years. But tonight they gave away a penalty just before the half hour mark and they haven't been able to get a goal back as of yet.
Okay, Ben Symes is there for us watching this game. How have they performed so far in this game, Bose?
Well, all I can tell you, it is not quite Mongolian state wrestling here at Dalyman Park. It is the last ever European game at Dalyman Park, and as of right now, Bose are letting these fans down. 55 minutes on the clock, it's Balchini 1, Bows 0. I mean, before we get to that, it's like real history at Dalyman Park. I think it's been quite brushed over, the last ever European game here. You had Zidane come here in the 1990s. Henrik Larsson came here in the mid-2000s and scored for Helsingborgs. They're up against Balchini tonight, who scraped through in the last round against Connors Quay of Wales with a 3-2 win. They finished third in the Kosovan League last season. And they were knocked out by Shamrock Rovers last year in the third round of Conference League qualifying. So this was a game that Bohemians definitely would have targeted to win. I have to say, they have been by far the dominant team here so far in Phibsborough. Balchini scored with their only shot on target in the 27th minute. Pat Hickey was deemed to have fouled Valentin Sarabi by referee Jakob Semler from Austria. Dom Gioni stepped up, and well, Paul Walters dived quite early down to his right hand side and he just slotted down the middle of the goal. But even at half time, Alan Reynolds must have been wondering how on earth Bohemians had a goal back in the game. A couple of chances of failing to Ross Tierney, he's not managed to put any in the back of the net. Colin Whelan had a strike from about 25 yards out or so where he hit on the volley and it just whistled past the upright, past the post. And even since the break at half time as well, Bows have been by far the more dominant team. Colin Whelan was actually taken down there in the box a couple of moments ago, but the referee waved away Bows' appeal. He's been quite lenient with not blowing the whistle for all things, but he did of course blow the whistle in the 27th minute to give Balchini the penalty, which has Bows 1-0 down. Alan Reynolds will be hoping as the second half goes on that their fitness against Balchini, who haven't started the Kosovan League yet, that their fitness will come through and they will manage to get a goal, because if they don't have a goal going to the second leg next week, they'll be left scratching their heads wondering how they have not. So it's 56 minutes on the clock, it's as we stand, Bohemians 0, Balchini 1.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We'll be checking in with Ben throughout the night as the second half develops there at Dalyman Park. Now, Eve, where are we going next?
We're heading to Athlone Town, and the Athlone Town women have moved a step closer towards qualification for their Champions League campaign this morning. The League of Ireland champions were 4-0 winners against North Macedonian team ZFK Skopje in the first qualifying round semi-final in Poland. Lily Ag's side will now progress to the final on Saturday, where they will face home side Sarzny Sosnowiec who won their semi-final 7-1 today. Athlone will be hoping to emulate their first round success from last year, where they defeated Cardiff City and ZNK Agram to reach the second round. But they're hoping to do one better than their last European campaign, where they had lost their round two semi-final, won the third place playoff, but ultimately could not progress past the inaugural Europa Cup first qualifying round.
Now then, on to Manchester City. They've handed out a new big contract.
They have. So Phil Foden has signed a new four-year contract at Manchester City. He's committed his future to the club until 2030. When his contract expires, Foden will have been at City for 20 years. The 26-year-old has made 369 appearances, helping them win six Premier League titles since his step up from the academy 9 years ago. Manchester City were the Premier League side with the most players away at World Cup duty this summer at 19, but Foden wasn't one of them. He has, however, already worked with new Man City boss Enzo Maresca, who of course was Pep Guardiola's assistant during their treble-winning 2022-23 season.
Yeah, good piece of business here for City.
You think so? It is weird how he's kind of fallen off, isn't it?
Has he fallen off as a result of Guardiola's tendency to mix up his team?
Possibly. Possibly, but when he's at his best, there's very few better.
Because he started the season so well, and then the second half of the season there was a significant drop off, and it's hard to know kind of what happened there.
Yeah,
playing a bit deeper in then kind of the tactics Pep had been putting forward in the second half of that season. I think Cherki coming in maybe meant he wasn't playing in that similar role he had been previously, but at the same time, yeah, you're right, his goal output certainly has dropped off considerably without providing any assists to kind of make up for that, which you might imagine would happen playing a wee bit deeper.
Definitely.
It's a strange one.
Do we think Pep is going to go to Italy?
Oh, I love the story.
Yeah.
What a great story. It would definitely be the hardest job he's ever taken on. By a considerable distance, I'd say, in terms of at least what you're starting with. They're not amazing. Unless he knows something we don't, and they've sorted all their stuff out, now he'll reap the benefits.
But, in 4 years' time, if they're playing at a World Cup, that's already better than three previous World Cup competitions.
But it is funny, though, when I saw it, I was there, if that happens there, so they're right in the mix for the Euros now. I don't think he goes in just to do a job, does he? I'll get you back in the mix of things. I don't know why he wants it. Why would he take it? What's in it for him?
But have we actually got any suggestion that Pep Guardiola wants this? The headlines are all very much Italian Football Federation have made extraordinary exceptions in terms of freeing up cash to get this guy. Does Guardiola actually want it?
They're having their Trapattoni moment.
Yeah, well, potentially.
It would be cool. It would be very, very cool. You'd definitely be paying more attention to Italy games.
I do like that he seems to be kind of linked to the new team every few days. There was a story a couple of days ago that he had a tentative agreement with England before they decided to go with Tuchel or whoever that ended up happening. But that could also be more of the English FA saying, well, we tried to get Pep.
Yeah, yeah. You have some GAA for us then. We are a few days away from the All-Ireland football final.
We are, and Mayo boss Andy Moran has encouraged supporters to get excited for their game against Kerry. After Mayo's semi-final win against Louth, Moran vehemently defended fans' right to get caught up in the hype of reaching an All-Ireland final. This is Mayo's first final since 2021, and it's been 75 years since their last victory. Moran insists that hype has never lost a game of football.
What annoyed me about that question was... hype never lost a game of football. People getting excited, supporters enjoying themselves, never lost anyone a game of football. And none of my All-Irelands that I partaked in had that anthem to do with it. So it's just something that to throw at Mayo. I keep saying, Kerry and Dublin have dominated the All-Irelands for 100 years here. Everyone else wins in All-Ireland every now and then. It's not... That's the way it works. And we're going to try to win one. We're going to try to win one next Sunday. And if we're good enough, we will. If we're not, it's got nothing to do with our supporters having a good time, you know. Or even after Roscommon up in Clonus at a smaller crowd, our fans got us over the line that day. Monaghan were coming back, an exceptional team. Bobby McCall, absolutely wreaking havoc at the edge of our square. And our fans got us through that game. They got us over the line, and it was amazing to see that day. And the same here against Meath, the same against Cork, the same as Louth. I would feel that our fans are a huge benefit to us. Other people might try to turn it, but listen, there's nothing like a Mayo crowd when it gets cold.
Yeah, it's very true. I don't think hype has ever been a reason why Mayo have lost in All-Ireland. Is that an outrageous... I don't think that's a hot take at all. I think maybe the only All-Ireland final where they would have been expected to win in my lifetime that they didn't was 2021. And even then, Tirana beating Kerry.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you who was favourite according to the bookies that day, but by feel, I felt that because Mayo had beaten Dublin, they would have been favourites going into that All-Ireland final. The previous year was against Dublin. Best team of all time. Forget that. The previous All-Ireland before that was 2017. Best team of all time. Forget about that. They weren't in it. So 16. Mm. Best team of all time. Forget about that. 2012 was Donegal.
Was probably an argument. I said it was more 50-50.
Donegal, certainly. That's the other one you would talk to as a potential moment where they were expected to win. Prior to that, what is it? 2006? Kerry. 2004, Kerry.
Best team of the night.
97, Kerry. So 1989, maybe before that?
Was 96 Meath?
96, sorry, before that, yeah. So, I don't know, certainly in recent memory, there are very few All-Ireland finals where Mayo would have been expected to win and they sort of just didn't show up. Like, maybe Mayo people would speak with a bit more knowledge than I would on this. Do they look back at 2021? Do they look back at 2012 as games where they really underperformed, as they really didn't show up? I'm not really sure they did. Maybe they didn't hit their highest heights. Certainly after the semi-final performances they put in both of those years. But for me, when you talk about the Mayo hype, you've got to start identifying a team that have crumbled under the weight of expectation. And I'm not sure that has happened in any of the All-Ireland finals they played.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. But I even some of the build-up now, and you hear different things talking about that there's a lack of hype around this, so as if they're somehow managing it. But I'm just really interested in how does it manifest itself one way or another? What does hype or unhype look like? What is the difference? I really, like, what are we supposed to be seeing there? Is it like a brash sort of arrogance or loads of stuff doing rounds in WhatsApp groups? Speaking of which, some of the general things that like around the hurling and the WhatsApp groups, it is remarkable how quickly people have them together now. It's like as soon as something happens, they're already getting sent around, generally mocking whoever happens to be your opposing team. But anyway, beside the point, hype in general, like, is it like painted cows in fields? Like, is it that, like, you know, like, is it that sort of thing? Is that like, oh, they've lost the run of themselves again? But like, I genuinely don't know how it manifests itself. What is the, where is the evidence of the excitement one way or another?
Mm-hmm. What's the appropriate level of hype?
Yeah, like, but like, what even is it? How does it manifest itself? Where is it? Who's hyped? Where are they hyped? How are they hyped? I just don't.
Yeah, like, I will say there is probably a piece for every All-Ireland final manager to insulate your players from certain things.
Yeah, I'd hope that,
like,
at least.
So it's, like, that when that question is asked in the press conference, I'm sure what the intention is like, you know, there's going to be so much hype in Mayo. These players haven't experienced an All-Ireland final in a few years. How do you go through the basic process of, you know, sorting tickets and the way in which friends, family even might be pulling out of you in the week leading up to a final? That's how the occasion might get to a player who has not experienced the roundabout of an All-Ireland final before. But this notion of supporters going buck mental into a build-up to a final.
Like, are you out every night? Like, are you just, like, is it... I don't know. I don't...
These players don't live above pubs.
No, they don't, no. I just, oh God, I don't know. I just, it's one of those things that it's so funny, and it actually tied it in a little bit. I think I was talking about this on one of the days about, like, even the Caroline Curd stuff the weekend. Like, there's a very distinct lack of knowledge of what she does so successfully within that setup. But, like, it's just because the notion is there now that she is vitally important, which she may well be. But, like, it is then the speech at the end after the final. It's like, just gets this bigger ovation than John Kiely. It's like, well, hold on. Like, where are we putting this now? Like, I think it affirmed.
I apologize to the poster of this, but because I can't remember who it was, but I opened up X earlier on and somebody posted a picture of Rodri saying, Rodri thanks Caroline Curd for her amazing work during the year.
Oh, just, oh, things get out of hand.
We have All-Ireland semi-finals then this weekend in the Camogie. Eve, talk to us about these.
We do. So Circa McCartan of Cork says her county are more excited for the All-Ireland semi-finals this year because she believes they're not coming in as favourites. Cork lost in the final last year against Galway by 1 point, failing to make it 3 Camogie championships in a row. Cork enjoyed a month gap between matches this year after securing automatic passage into the semi-finals due to the new structure of the Camogie championships. So last year's semi-finalists were all put in Group 1, with Cork benefiting from the top 2 of that group, securing direct semi-final qualification. McCartan, speaking to Off the Ball's Rachel Sheehan yesterday, says that this year's semi-final against Tipperary and Thurles this Saturday has a different feel to it.
I was actually thinking there during the week, like the last two semi-finals anyways, we've came away with relief at the final whistle. You know, it's kind of been like a weight off your shoulders. Whereas I feel like this year it would just be absolutely unbelievable if we could, you know, put on performance and get a win. I think, you know, it wouldn't be relief. It would be like, you know, excitement or whatever. So, yeah, it's definitely got a different feel, but that obviously reduces the pressure. And I think that's what this team needs anyways, you know, a bit of, I suppose, when you go into games with a weight on your shoulder, you probably underperform. So I think just shackles off this weekend now and go out and bring a huge intensity.
So that's the camogie. In the hurling then, we have news on Liam Cahill leave.
We do. So it was announced last night that Tipperary senior hurling manager Liam Cahill will stay at the helm for 2027 and beyond. He was re-ratified by the Tipperary County Board on Monday and will continue in his role for another 3 years. He's been tip manager since July of 2022 and he won an All-Ireland title in 2025, as well as titles at minor, under 20 and under 21 level with the county. No details about his backroom team have been released as of yet, but there is an expectation that it will be a renewed focus on developing young talent.
And then finally, some tennis news.
Yeah, so Carlos Alcaraz will have a chance to defend his US Open title this year. The former world number one hasn't played tennis since sustaining a wrist injury at the Barcelona Open in April, but he is due to return for the final Grand Slam of the year in Flushing Meadows. He missed both Roland Garros and Wimbledon this year through that injury, and his first match back before the US Open will be at the Cincinnati Open next month. And then elsewhere, Serena Williams could be one of the 16 wildcard entries for her home Grand Slam, though she is also struggling with an injury, a knee injury picked up during her Wimbledon comeback.
Eve, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Shifty Lad has been in touch to say, I'm fluent in Kazakh. The first clip mentioned the Kerry Mafia and the Yera going on. He also said that Talisman Cup final was an amazing sport and should be exported. That's exactly what was going on in that clip, I think. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Time for the cash machine.